The words of reflection come from my favorite book in the world, Watership Down. It is a paraphrasing of the story of the blessing of El Herrera, because it is 5 pages long in the original. Before the world existed, there existed Frith. Frith created the world and the stars with his droppings, and upon the world he created the rivers, mountains, plants, and animals. At the time of their creation, all animals were the same. Both kestrel and sparrow ate flies and seeds, and the fox and rabbit were friends and ate grass together. The first of the rabbits was named El Herrera, and he had wives without number. Because of El Herrera and his many wives, the earth soon grew so densely populated in rabbits that they ate all the grass, leaving the other animals hungry, and so the animals began to complain to Frith. Frith went to El Herrera and warned him that he must keep his people under control, but El Herrera said that he multiplied so as to show his love of Frith, and his people did the same. Frith was angered by El Herrera's impudent remark, but decided that the world needed cunning and jest, so instead of killing El Herrera, he chose to play a trick on him. So Frith called forth all of the animals one by one in order to bestow upon them a gift, but making sure that El Herrera would arrive last. When the blackbird came, Frith gave him his beautiful song, and when the cow came, he gave her her sharp horns and the strength to be afraid of no other creature. When the fox and the stoat and the weasel came, Frith gave them sharp teeth and claws and the desire to hunt and kill all of El Herrera's children. When El Herrera caught wind of his new enemies, he started to dig a burrow in the ground in which to hide, and so when Frith came to him, El Herrera was only half out of the ground. Frith asked El Herrera to come out so he might give the rabbit his gift, but El Herrera refused and kept digging for his life. "If you want to bless me, you can bless my bottom, for it is sticking out of the hole." Encouraged by the rabbit's determination, even in the face of trial, Frith did exactly that. He gave to El Herrera strong legs with which to run, and a tail that shone like a star to warn the other rabbits as he took flight. Frith also made this promise to El Herrera: "All the world shall be your enemy, prince with 1,000 enemies, and whenever they catch you, they will kill you. But first, they must catch you, digger, listener, runner, prince with the swift warning. Be cunning and full of tricks, and your people shall never be destroyed."
When I was a little girl, I went to a preschool that was held in an old country farmhouse down a long driveway. I remember vaguely sitting on the porch with other very little kids, shelling peas into a metal tub. What fun! One day we took a walk down that long driveway, and I remember it was the very first time I ever saw a praying mantis, and how we were all so fascinated and scared at the same time. Inside the old farmhouse, what had been built to be a parlor just inside the front door had been turned into the little preschool area for us little ones. And at the dreaded nap time, when we had to pull out those little mats onto the middle of the floor to help us settle down, our teacher played music for us to listen to. That was back in the days when musicals were very popular, you know, the ones that were written for the stage first and then turned into movies. I miss that, don't you? There were so many good ones. Anyway, I remember the song that played at the beginning of our nap time. Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. Recognize that one? Good old Mary Poppins, of course. I thought it was really cool that Julie Andrews was the actress who played her. Some people used to guess that I might have been named after Julie Andrews, but my parents actually named me after a song by one of their favorite bands, a male singing group called The Four Freshmen. I personally love that I was named after a song. I believe I inherited a deep love of music from both of my parents' lines. My mother's mother actually played the guitar and sang, even though she was busy raising six children on a farm. My father's father was actually a professional jazz musician. Paul Kane was a jazz orchestra leader, and one of the things that he did was led the band on Arthur Godfrey's radio show back in the day. I didn't get to meet either of those grandparents, but I like remembering now and then that I share something precious with both of them, my love for music. Matthew Fox, that renegade Catholic priest who got kicked out because of his alternative theology that he calls creation spirituality, started his work by challenging the long-held Christian notion of original sin. It isn't that Fox doesn't believe in sin at all. He knows, as most of us have noticed, that all humans are capable of misdeeds. But Matthew Fox prefers to build his theology on the notion of original blessing rather than original sin. He challenges, as Unitarian Universalists do, the assumption that humanity was created with a fallen, blemished nature that requires some outside force to provide salvation or some kind of payment for an inherently sinful nature. An assumption that, by the way, is not duplicated by all the other major religions of the world. But far from being infallible, Matthew Fox would say that even though he believes we are all born with original blessing rather than original sin, we still are capable of sinning. Making mistakes, of course, but also not just that, of actually causing harm. These are sins of commission, the sins we commit that fail to take into the account the well-being of others. But Fox also talks about another kind of sin, the sin of omission, those things we could have done but fail to do, whether it's preventing the harm of another by stepping in when we have a chance, or by failing to offer the blessing that is unique within us to the world, failing to live our potential. That is also a sin of omission. You see, I am kind of similar to Matthew Fox in believing that what is called divine nature or God is actually the amazing creativity that we can see at work in this universe all around us. And since we are a part of that amazing creativity of nature, we are, in some ways, as the old verse goes, made in the image of God. Because we too, by nature, are creative beings, capable not only of choice, but of great imagination and cultivation. Martha Graham, the famous dancer, put it this way: there is a vitality, a life force, a quickening that is translated through you into action. And there is only one of you in all of time. Your expression is unique, and if you block it, it will never exist through any other medium, and it will be lost. The world will not have it. She goes on to say, "It's not your business to determine how good it is, not how it compares with some other expression. It is your business to keep it yours, clearly and directly, to keep that channel open. You do not even have to believe in yourself to do your work. You only have to keep open and aware directly to the urges that motivate you. Keep that channel open. No artist is ever pleased. There is no satisfaction at any time, only a queer divine dissatisfaction, a blessed unrest that keeps us marching and makes us ever more alive." The other day, I was watching a show with Stephen Hawking, who we lost recently, and he was saying in this show that the creativity of the universe is actually generated out of its imperfection. Things are thrown out of balance in all kinds of ways, and the elements of the universe are therefore in this constant motion of energy, all kinds of energy. Isn't it amazing to think about? So there is this other way of looking at original sin and original blessing. We can think of sin as a misdeed or a mistake, but we can also think of sin as a wounding, a way that we're thrown off balance, out of health, which is also a way we lose our sense of being complete or whole. Something is missing, something is askew. We have a wound, a place in need of healing. When we think about original sin in this way, a place of wounding, it has been said that in every one of our lives we will encounter an original wounding, a heartache or injury that sets us upon sometimes a lifelong journey of questing for repair, restoration, or simply an eventual state of acceptance. All our great stories have some variation of the hero or shero's journey or quest, a quest to overcome obstacles or fulfill a difficult task in order to restore balance to themselves or to the world or both. Even a lot of children's stories will often start out with a challenge of a tragic heartache that sets the scene for the unfolding of the story to come and the unfolding of the potential within the protagonist, whoever that might be. Even though it is often a lonely journey to face these life challenges, there are almost always helpers who appear along the way. Either other characters with special gifts to lend a hand, or perhaps to bestow a special tool that will help our protagonist succeed in meeting the task at hand. And very often, our protagonists doubt they have what it takes to fulfill the quest. Sound familiar? The hidden beauty of this perennial and universal storyline is that it is in the imperfection of the protagonist, the unready hero or shero, that the incredible creativity lies, that space for creative energy to do its magical dance. That's why we have all these great quotes about it. Most recently, there's one often pulled from the Leonard Cohen song that has become a contemporary classic called Anthem. His line goes, "Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in." But before that, Back in Hemingway's novel, A Farewell to Arms from 1929, he wrote, "The world breaks everyone, and afterward many are strong at the broken place." Then there was also our buddy, Ralph Waldo Emerson, who wrote a similar line. He wrote, "There is a crack in everything God has made." And even the Sufi poet mystic Rumi, back in the 13th century, was translated by Coleman Barks as writing in a poem about the wound being a place where light enters us for healing. It's an ancient way, really, we humans have of shoring ourselves up to meet the challenges that life presents to us, and why in native traditions around the world, it was recognized that every single child comes into this world with his or her own unique talents and gifts. Many of those indigenous traditions call those gifts medicine. In seeking out and fulfilling our gifts, our unique potentials, it helps to find a story that speaks to us, one that our own life experience resonates with. It helps to have heroes and sheroes, mentors and role models who can inspire us with their courage and successes, especially in those dark moments when we are not feeling up to the task. In some native traditions, in addition to an infant being given its own name, a trusted family member will listen for a song that belongs only to this child, a song his or hers alone, and that is sung to them throughout their life to encourage the full blossoming of their potential. I think that's a beautiful tradition. What are the stories that inspire you? Who are your heroes and sheroes who have helped you find and create yourself as you have met the most demanding challenges of your life? Who has pointed out the beauty of your song to you at a moment when you most needed it? Who has noticed that you might even have a secret superpower? The medicine that is yours alone to offer. And I bet there are some who have been helped by it. I bet if you think about it, you will know what I'm talking about. I think a secret superpower of mine must be my love of music. Not only has it saved me or helped me through some of my life's hardest places, I have seen my love of music touch other people in my life, sometimes in a healing way. It really is like a medicine. And there are new stories being written and lived all the time. How can we not be inspired by youth leaders across our country, like the ones from Parkland, who are turning their experiences of tragedy into activism for the healing of the world and for the prevention of further harm? A new story to inspire us. There's a quote that's often misattributed to Nelson Mandela. He did use it in his work to rebuild South Africa after apartheid. The quote is actually from Marianne Williamson from her book called A Return to Love, Reflections on the Principles of A Course in Miracles. I'm sure a number of you have heard this before. She writes, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we might just be powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? But actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small simply does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. She goes on to say, we are all meant to shine as children do. We are born to make manifest a glory of God that is in us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fears, our presence automatically helps to liberate others. Those are powerful words. A lesser known quote of hers that goes along with this message of ours today is, each of us has a unique part to play in the healing of this world. May it be so. We will now gratefully receive an offering to support the work of our congregation within and beyond our walls. Thank you.